I think it's really important for people to, number one, separate doing business and making money from the marketing aspect, an annuity that you can provide. And the annuity is building this frequency. And the way that I look at it is, how truthful is that frequency to what you want to be?
This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook.
This is a huge subject that we are not going to do amazing, comprehensive justice to in 1 hour, because you could spend a lifetime trying to figure out how to build a brand. But I know that you have some real key pointers, some broken down guides to what it means to really build a brand that matters and that reaches people and that people connect to. So let's dive into it. What is the number one most important thing to be thinking about?
Is number one thing to think about is frequency, right? Which is a vibration. So any object, a product, a solution, a service, or you, right? And I come from that industry because I ran the most notable sports agency in the world. So building brands like Warren Moon or Troy Aikman or Steve Young or Evander Holyfield, these are brands. Now, in the past, we didn't know how to monetize those brands as well as we do now. Mm-hmm. But in fact, I think the trend is for those brands to encapsulate even leagues, teams, and organizations now, that individual brands will be utilized by investment bankers to take stock instead of just endorsement deals. But moreover, frequency. So frequency is the idea that everything vibrates, and people can only be aware of that which vibrates equal to or less than them. So what is the frequency? Number one, it's a strength of a signal, mm-hmm. right? A strength of a signal, a reach of a signal takes time, right? It takes time because in order to identify a signal, we have to have a repetitive pinging so that we're like, oh, that's Entrepreneur. Oh, that's Entrepreneur. It's been around for decades mm-hmm. because we've seen that brand. Although the word may have meant something over the years, most people, when they see it in that font and that size, they identify
they immediately recognize
with
it,
your
they
brand.
Know what to come to expect.
It's a frequency.
Yeah. Right.
And that signal we need to work on through consistent behavior, right? Mm-hmm. So we want things to be the same. The second point is a spectrum. So a frequency, there's different channels. And some frequencies only talk to 13-year-old girls.
Right. I feel like with when you use the word frequency, you're both speaking kind of metaphorically here, but at the same time, you're talking about literally frequency, which is to say recurrence, like be delivering very, very consistently so that people know that you're there, they haven't forgotten about you, and you're always delivering the same kind of value over and over again so that nobody is mistaken about what your value proposition is.
Yeah, it's a consistent, persistent pursuit of that idea,
yeah.
right? And that's really what you have to do.
And can I ask, sorry to,
yeah,
before you move
that's
on.
That's what this is about.
Is that in contrast, I wonder, when you're thinking about that, to mission drift? I think oftentimes people, they build a brand and then they kind of scramble around and they think, well, they'll offer this thing to these people and they'll offer this to that. And it becomes infrequent in that they are not delivering the same thing to the same people over and over and over again. They're kind of scrambling, and so they're creating a confusion because people don't know what it is that they stand for. And if you are not making that clear to people over and over and over again, then they're either going to lose interest or just be genuinely confused.
Absolutely. Now, here's the interesting thing is we get into a shift in who and what people do. By 2027, over 50% of the people who work in America will be freelancers. Mm-hmm. So don't confuse the fact that everybody needs to build a brand. Right, we're talking about
we're
brand.
Talking personal brand.
Exactly,
yeah.
or product brand. You don't need to. There's some solutions, products, et cetera, that are extremely profitable that no one will ever know about, right? You can have a company with a lug nut that is unique and has incredible IP, and that's a business,
sure.
But you don't brand that.
Yeah.
Right, nobody cares. Maybe within a tiny, tiny spectrum, you might brand it,
right.
But maybe not.
Right,
anyway,
well, you're a respected brand within a very specific industry and buyers who need to know that you're reliable to them, but you're not going out and building the brand the way that Coca-Cola builds a brand.
Exactly.
Gary Vaynerchuk builds a brand.
Exactly. Or right. Kim Kardashian or Kylie or whoever
right.
it would be. And that frequency, though, that is a metaphorical analogy, but it's also a mathematical one to me. Mm-hmm. There is a strength of a signal, and you can see it grow, and there's data and analytics that are following behind it. And so there's all these variables in a frequency, right? How many people view a frequency?
Mm-hmm.
And in the past, we used to use billboards and magazines, and that's
sure.
how, and it was very hard to track. If this was on the table at Sports One Marketing, which it is, by the way,
mm-hmm.
I have no idea how many people look at it.
Right.
But I have a lot of people through my office every day. Mm-hmm. But whereas now, when we view it in a digital format, we know exactly who's viewing it for how long, where they started, where they dropped off, what was intriguing. Totally. It's incredible. Well, it's very important that we continue to have the consistent, persistent push of that frequency so it's strong, mm-hmm. it's wide, so as many channels as we can.
Right.
And then the last one is the clarity of the brand. So Entrepreneur has a very clear brand, mm-hmm. right? And when you get into the thought process or the confusion of brand, we don't have clarity anymore. What do they do? Is McDonald's about chicken, or were they the best burger? Or, and you can see how people have picked up on the mistakes that large brands have made before. You know, right. Coca-Cola, in fact, made a really big mistake when they were messing around with the original Coke Classic and spent all this money to brand something that they realized we were just confusing a frequency.
Sure.
Right? And so I think it's really important for people to, number one, separate doing business and making money from the marketing aspect, an annuity that you can provide. And the annuity is building this frequency. And the way that I look at it is, how truthful is that frequency to what you want to be? That, like, people just, they start confusing it. They start manipulating, lying, overselling, back-end selling. Energetically or frequency-wise, it doesn't resonate with people. People buy on emotion for logical reasons.
Yeah.
So brands can evoke emotion. And we lose that. We sometimes tend to go for the credibility before we go for the emotional attachment. Mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer in my brands are gonna hold a frequency that resonate with you in an emotional way. Make me feel a certain way.
Yeah.
Starbucks makes us feel a certain
right,
way.
Right.
Very strong brand because of the experiential nature of it. It has an emotional attachment that I feel better. Whether or not the product is better or not is always a matter of how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because it's subjective.
Right, and so there's a kind of simplify and repeat element here. I mean, you had brought up Gary as an example of a brand, and that's true. He definitely has turned himself into a brand. But of course, most people are building brands that aren't people. They're brands that are products, and so the thing that they want to do is create a voice, and then have that voice speak for the brand as a brand, and build that relationship. Which, in a way, I would imagine is harder because it's easier to connect with a human being than it is to a brand. But, you know, we had talked about Coca-Cola earlier, and when I think about simplify and repeat, right, which is what we were talking about with Gary, you can see how that works with Coca-Cola as well as it does with Gary, because you can distill both of those down to like two words, right? Coca-Cola is happiness. Gary is hustle and humble.
Yep.
You can squeeze the whole thing down into something that's so simple that you understand why people would come back to it. Because they're looking for that fulfillment of that one idea that they really emotionally connect to.
Right, that's the clarity of the message, right? Because we all like simple, it makes us feel better, there's order, and that clarity of message so that when you say Starbucks is experience or Nordstrom, it's customer service, or you know, Gary is hustle and humble, and I like to be that vulnerable and humble, right? Mm-hmm. Or an illuminator, like illuminating, you know, all the truths, whatever it would be. I know that frequency. I know what spectrum the frequency is going to resonate, like hustle and humble. I know the spectrum of people that are interested in hustle and humble. And now that's a very clear brand. So is Empathy Wine hustle and humble? Well, if you're going to put it out there, it better be hustle and humble.
Right.
I don't know if it is or not. And
right.
Gary, if anyone can pull it off, he can. But right? And then what are those words that apply to your brand? Or even more, like take Peloton, which is a successful growing brand, or SoulCycle. Right? Those, they have a great business model, but they also have a great product. But if it wasn't branded correctly, there could have been confusion about why is this any different than the MLM Nordic track that I've seen 100 infomercials for.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They created an actual brand of frequency. When you watched, looked, felt, experienced how they sold it to you, it was all within this higher end, right, echelons of an experiential product that's completely personalized to you.
Yeah.
You know, and it really, I think, is the true first virtual product that's extremely successful.
Where does that sense of what a brand stands for and what it is to other people, where does that come from? And how do you build that? Is that I mean, listen, it's easy to say it's organic and it comes from the founder and it comes from whatever, but there's a strategy that has to happen in order to identify not just something that you feel like you can build a brand on, but that you know your target audience is going to respond to.
Yeah, and there's three steps in that, and it's been used forever, mm-hmm. but people haven't really looked at it in a pragmatic way. Number one is the content itself. You have to look at your product, your service, your solution, or your self-brand as straight out content. Mm-hmm. And in content, the highest vibrating content will always succeed. The problem with content is its ideas. And there is a billion great ideas. I used to say a million. There's a billion great ideas. But those people that know how to find a frequency and monetize the frequency are gonna be the winners and the greatest frequencies that you have in content. So I always tell people, if you're gonna build a brand, spend your hours getting alignment with your frequency and the content that you're gonna create that it matches the frequency. So when you see, you know, a magazine article, a commercial, whether it's radio, print, TV, social media, whatever it is, there has to be the consistency, but it also has to have content that really resonates with you. And that content has an emotional attachment to it. So Mickey Mouse, Disney is a fairly good brand to use. If you look at it, in 1940s, it was a black and white whistling mouse, Steamboat Willie. It was great content. And people accessed it on a variety of different ways. Well, today on YouTube, which didn't exist in 1940, it has 470 million or so views for the Mickey Mouse Club. That's because for years, what Disney has really focused in on is that frequency of their content. Is it all consistent, right? Whatever their values were, whatever they are, they're always looked at, aligned, and they have such quality control of the content that reaches the same quality of control that Apple has for its products, right? They use just as much QC on their quality of content as they did on their products when Steve Jobs especially was in charge.
Yeah.
Now, the next step that we have to utilize is I come up with the frequency and alignment of my content. It's exceptional in my opinion and aligned with what I'm trying to do. Now, I have to take a strategic look at how are people gonna access my content. Mm-hmm. Because different people access things different way. I had a financial planner one time and I was trying to convince him to advertise in a different place because he was on the radio for Angels Baseball. And he taught me a lesson in branding. Mm-hmm. He said, Dave, the ultimate client for me is a 70 to 85 year old white male. And they love to listen to baseball on the radio. Right. Nobody else is really using the radio,
but he knows where his audience is.
And they access that. And so he created content that was at the frequency to 70 to 85 year old white males. Mm-hmm. And he used the point of access that they were utilizing to do that. And then you want to actually incorporate the mediums that you watch it or listen to it on. So it's not just transmitting it or accessing it via radio waves.
Yeah.
It's where now can you listen to the radio? Was it the car? Because why would that be important? Most people don't think about it. If you don't look at the medium in which people do it, now 70 to 85 year old men are not listening to the radio in the car, right? Because most of them are not working day jobs where they're commuting anymore.
Right.
They actually are accessing the radios in different ways at different times, right? So they go into that early morning bathroom break because that's where that handheld radio is still being used by that. And he's explaining this to me.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
there are probably a lot of bathroom breaks when you're an 85-year-old man.
And I'm thinking to myself when he's explaining, this is really interesting because I have a lot of millennials that work with me.
Uh-huh.
And it's the same conversation that I have with a 27-year-old telling me, Dave, I don't ever watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so you don't want to do that on TV. But then here's what's interesting, right? I teach them a lesson from my generation. I said, you may not want the playbook to be on Fox Sports, which it is.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but here's what happens when it's on Fox Sports. You'll never watch it on Fox Sports. But when I capture it on Fox Sports and I put it up onto my Instagram in a little 3-minute highlight, all the young people who never watch TV DM me, oh my God, this is awesome, you're on Fox Sports.
It's a legitimizer for them.
It's a credibility. It's not an emotional attachment, it's not an access, but the medium itself is used for a different purpose.
Sure.
So my point is from your question, really find the frequency in the content, study the strategy of that. Mm-hmm. How are people that accessing it, right? Which genre are they accessing? TV, radio, print, social media, but also look at the medium.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Samsung phones look different than iPhones compared to which radios, because you have to figure out when, where, and how the people that you're trying to attract
Right.
Your lowest hanging fruit are going to resonate, so you can consistently get more bang for your dollar.
Right. I think right, because in both of those anecdotes, the reaching the 85-year-old men listening to the radio, and also the Fox Sports on Instagram, are both built off of a fundamental understanding of the media consumption habits of your consumer. Like, if you can't just, you don't. You need more than just to understand your consumer and how to speak to them. You also need to understand what to them is legitimate and what spaces are they paying attention to and what looks impressive to them and when to actually reach them with the medium that they're using and the moment in which they're perhaps most open to some kind of message. I mean, there's a level of sophistication there where you're not just producing content, but you're really understanding how that content is received as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And then how do I monetize it after it's been received? Mm-hmm. Right. One of the big things that I focus it on, and I inspire people and hopefully empower them, is I put profitability first. Although my brand is a humanitarian and a philanthropic leader, you know, I wrote a book called Compassionate Capitalism. I believe it doesn't happen unless you're making money. Mm-hmm. I believe in activity you get paid for. I believe everyone should have as much activity in their life that they get paid for as they can.
Right.
And I think that too many people are lost in this woo-woo utopic world of I'm going to have my passion and purpose. I truly have an epiphany about purpose and the why. Like every book that's written about why, I think you're doing a disservice to people, because what people really are missing is the what and the how. Mm-hmm. I'll give you 99.9% of everyone's why. You want to help somebody that you love.
Oh, yeah.
Or help something that you love.
Right.
Right. Some school, church, family member, mom, you want to buy her house. Mm-hmm. That probably covers 50% of the people. I'm doing this because I want to buy my house. I hope that's about 50, but yet there's books and all these people about, I want to be passionate about what I do. I want to follow my purpose. I'm like, learn to love what you do. Mm-hmm. That's what you want to do. Right? Everyone has told me my whole career, because I've been so blessed that I'm like, who the heck's going to love selling legal research online? Let's be honest, Jason.
Yeah.
No, I learned to love it. Right, I did all these things to infuse purpose, mm-hmm. because I knew what I wanted, which was to make a lot of money,
yeah.
right? And I had to figure out, my challenge was I was gonna love learning how to get it, mm-hmm. and how to do it.
Right.
And so that's a really important part. So through this brand recognition, part of branding and frequency is, what good is it to build a brand that you're not gonna get what you want out of it? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people do, like, you know, you want to build your business, or you want to make money, or do you want to make, what do you want to do out of that brand? Because I do, believe it or not, there's people that have really strong brands, especially in the fitness world. They have built huge following, a huge brand, and they make no money. A lot of kids in esports, right? I'm a sports guy who's represented the greatest brands in sports, not just products, but people.
Yeah.
And I see these esports stars that have far greater brands than what we see on TV, and yet they make literally no money off of their brand.
Right. Well, you know, it's funny. I actually had a friend who for a little bit went into the agent for esports
yeah.
space, and was finding it actually was really, really hard, because all of these big gamers had become so used to just getting free stuff, and that was what they thought of as their compensation, that they didn't want to stop that and start charging companies, because they thought they were just gonna lose all their free stuff. And so it was a real problem, right? Here
right.
was a business opportunity. Here was a time in which you could convert, but they didn't want to do it because they were happy with the status quo. And the status quo was fine if you like free stuff. But if you want to think bigger and build a brand that will make you a lot of money and hopefully, I would imagine, go beyond this momentary, small, weird niche fame that you have, then you got to start thinking a lot more strategically. And they weren't. And that is, I think, one of the reasons why my friend got out of that business.
And I tell everyone all the time, I study history. And people are like, why do you study history? I thought you said don't stumble on the roadblocks behind you. I don't, right? I live in the present, I plan for the future, but why you study history is, you know, look back at the NFL, which is the most popular sport 2-1 to any sport in America. Mm-hmm. Players were paid $5,800 in driving cabs in the off season. This is historically what happens in successful sports,
yeah.
is that the talent that builds a brand and builds a game like that, mm-hmm. they love the game so much that they would do it for free.
Yeah.
And so they almost feel guilty and not worthy of actually sharing in the profits. You know, we're here in New York City and they have the Fortnite championships at $30 million.
Right.
That's no joke. Mm-hmm. Took the, you know, took a lot longer, put it this way, for the UFC to get their first $30 million purse.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
So let me rewind a little bit, because we're, you know, we're talking about making money off of brand, but there was a moment in which you were talking about really converting, right? That you built this brand, and then a lot of people don't know how to take that audience that they've built and really convert it, which I think is, again, harder if you're a personal brand, because then you've just built this relationship with people and now you're going to try to sell them, and that feels uncomfortable. But also, I think the same problem exists for just a product brand, in that, yes, at the very start, the reason why you're a brand out there is because you have some sort of product, but you don't know exactly how to pitch people. You don't want to hit them over and over and over again with the sales pitch. Instead, you want to do to bring up Gary again, the jab, 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 right hook. Yeah. Provide value, provide value, provide value, and then make the ask. I think people are uncomfortable with the ask. They don't know exactly how to make the ask, and they're afraid that taking a relationship that they've built off of some kind of emotional connection and then turning it into some kind of financial transaction is going to just spoil the whole thing. What do you say?
I say you're lazy, right? And I've told Gary this as well. I said, for me, jab, jab, jab means quantify the reasons, quantify them. Don't get lazy. Mm-hmm. Don't talk in a subjective, you know, way of it's going to maybe do this or so. Like, literally, if you're not ready to stand in front of someone with 120 value, what I mean is I'm giving you $100 and I'm going to ask you for 20 back. Can you see any reason you won't want to do that? Mm-hmm. Well, how do we do that? Quantify the reasons. After you have credibility and emotional attachment, which every personal brand does, or even product, quantify the reasons. I'm talking about money. Mm-hmm. Quantify the impact it's going to have on the life. Don't just talk about the emotional impact. Oh, your kids are going to, you know, talk about, look, college, if you do this SAT course, right? I'm Sean Patel. You do this SAT course, I will raise it 40%. Kids who get a 40% score higher gets this much more in scholarship money, gets into these types of schools that get this much more salary the rest of their life. This relates into this much money. Yes, you have to pay $1,200 for my course, mm-hmm. but I guarantee you that by the time they're 50 years old, this course has now netted $2.6 million minimum for it. I guarantee. Can you see any reason you won't want to do it? People don't go through the economic analysis. They're lazy. And so if you quantify reasons, quantify impact, and then quantify the capabilities. When people get, you know, very vague on their capabilities. I see this when you're raising money, which is a sale.
Yeah.
I always use this example. This guy told me the other day, he's like, oh, we're so successful. We have 300% growth this year. Oh, so you went from $1 to $3?
Right.
Like, don't be vague. Mm-hmm. Right? People read through that. All you're doing is creating a void, shortage, or obstacle for me to invest. Tell me what the numbers are.
Yeah.
Tell me what, you know, where we are at. Quantify the capabilities that you have. And then quantify, when I give the dollars, what capabilities I'm going to get from it. Right, that $80 net difference. That I'm going to give you 20.
You want to be really clear on the value. Value first.
Right, and that could be considered jab, jab, right. jab. Mm-hmm. Impact quantified, capability quantified, reasons quantified. And I think if people would stick to this formula, credibility, emotional attachment, reasons, impacts, and capabilities, mm-hmm. that you're closed, not just mentally, but being able to articulate it, and also energetically. I think what made me a great salesperson is people say, well, you got to believe in what you sold. The only reason I believed, I carried an energy that even it wasn't what I was saying, it was how I was saying it, that people resonated and they're like, oh, there's no way I'm losing. Like, this is a great deal. Right. I knew I was overselling when people were like, okay, what's the catch? Because mm-hmm. I got so excited and so passionate and so certain about it.
Yeah.
They'd be like, what's the catch? Because I was so young, I didn't realize that people with more experience were like, all right, man, I've mm-hmm. been here before. Quit overselling me. Just give me the exact numbers.
Yeah. Can you give me a tangible example of someone who you think has done a really good job of showing that value, of selling that value, of not being afraid to make that pitch after they've built that relationship?
Yeah, you know, for me, I was a traditional business person. I was someone who fought Microsoft. I thought DOS, WordPerfect 5.1. Apple was mm-hmm. for creative people. So I always go to Apple as someone that really did a great job, because there's a Five to Thrive that exists with a bunch of different companies, but they did it better than anyone. They stimulated interest, they transitioned interest, shared a vision, but what they did, that's 20% of it, and a lot of companies can do that, is a company that can manage and develop a vision like Apple did, meaning that I sat on a plane with my BlackBerry and my IBM ThinkPad, mm-hmm. and I was in the majority of enterprise customers. And I sat there in first class and I looked over one time and I opened my computer and it had viruses and it was taking forever to boot up. Yeah. And this younger executive opened his computer right next to me and he was working. And I said, oh, are you in advertising? No. You know, CEO of this company in the Silicon Valley. I'm like, well, you know, how are you using that computer? He said, what do you mean? I go, do you have Word? Do you have PowerPoint? Do you have back then? He, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? And I go, do you have no closed environment? I'm like, he sold the computer. He wasn't working for Apple, mm-hmm. right? I'm like, literally got off the plane and said, hey, order me one of those, you know, computers. It works for an enterprise guy.
Yeah.
And then the next thing was getting rid of my, you know, BlackBerry.
Mm-hmm.
Same kind of thing. All the different capabilities that they managed and developed literally through thriving, through other people's experience, that it just, they were lying out in the streets to get the next one.
Yeah.
And they still do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's a fabulous example of a company that literally was dead,
mm-hmm.
right? And utilized the five to thrive. They started stimulating interest in that experiential side. And that's where Steve Jobs, to me, was a genius. He looked at the customer experience from how they opened the product of what it felt like.
Yeah.
And the value of what you got, even the AirPods, I'm still, didn't want those AirPods.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there was so much value that my own guy sold it to me saying, I'm just gonna buy them for you because your hands, Dave, right? The quality, the way they stay in, you're gonna receive so much value that you're gonna get more calls in more efficiently, more places with the whiteout. But they were selling it to me. I'm like, wait, yeah. You work for me or do you work for Apple? This is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many companies I think that do that very, very well.
Mm.
And there's other companies that you're just disappointed when you receive the product.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, in example, that's why I think a lot of people who sell seminars, you know, there's a lot of that going on mm-hmm. in social media. You're selling from the back of the room or you're selling seminars sure. and workshops. It's going to wear off.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Unless you can really impact. And so what have you done? You've destroyed your products brand and your personal brand all for $300 a month because eventually if you don't manage and develop a vision where people are leaving there and telling people years later, what happens in most of the people that sell in the back of the room is they're only successful with the people that would have been successful without their program.
Mm-hmm.
And then they pick them out and market them as being successful. But most programs don't do what Apple does. They don't manage and develop a division where people are like, oh my gosh. And when I do executive coaching, I can only coach month to month and guarantee it
mm-hmm.
because I don't want anyone out there saying, well, you know, at first it was great. You know, the first few ideas changed my life, but you know, like he locked me in for a year and 6 months into it, he was telling me the exact same thing.
Right.
Be more interested than interesting. Be a student of your calendar, ask.
Uh-huh.
Like when I get to a point that I'm not providing you, like nobody does this in coaching.
Yeah.
My executive coaching, I actually have a quantifiable, I guarantee to be a profit center.
Hmm. So, all right. I promised that if a question came in, I was going to interrupt. I had a follow-up. And instead, I'm going to ask you this. How can you implement the 100 for 20 method when you're just starting out? I have a new business but can't necessarily quantify the value that I'm offering. It's a good question.
Yeah, I personally, you're not ready to sell it. Like if you can't quantify your own value, then give pilots, right? Let people experience so you can gather the data, the experience, and the testimonials necessary
mm-hmm.
to say, look, these people are using it. You haven't done the work, right? You're not ready to sell. I truly believe you're not ready to sell. You can give heavy discounts or pilot something, but people try to hurry in. They try to move forward with companies that aren't capitalized correctly. One of the things that I tell people that's confusing is work hard, right? People tell you, work smart.
Yeah.
But what people don't do, and this is a good example with entrepreneurship, they don't work long. Here's the biggest problem that we have in everything we do is that we can go 10 years in a venture and be 25% of the way there and we start putting faith in what everybody else thinks
mm-hmm.
that we're not successful, that we're wasting our time, never should have dropped out of Harvard, all the different things. But if I'm focused in on, and this is what this person should do, focus in on, are you accelerating and growing? At what pace am I accelerating and growing? Because here's what happens. You're 20 years old. By the time you're 30, everybody's against you and you're only 25% of the way there. But you've grown and accelerated to get there. Well, at the same pace, most people within 5 years, we'll be 50% of the way there. Well, 99% of the people are going to quit in 10 years. Mm-hmm. Out of that 1% that hang on the next 5 years, another 99% of those will quit. And at 35 years old, you're putting faith in what everybody else thinks. Here's the saddest thing. At the same acceleration and exponential growth, you're only 2.5 years from being 100% of the way there, where everyone thinks you're lucky. Then you're only 1.75 years from being 200%. Then you're half of that from 400, half of that from 800. That's how Jeff Bezos, 25 years ago, almost to the date, was in a garage telling people that I'm gonna have a bookstore online and be worth over $100 billion and be the most powerful person in the world because I own the world marketplace. Now, let's be honest, I'm an optimist. If Jeff would have told me that 25 years ago from his garage, I would have never believed him.
Yeah.
But all he was focused in on was acceleration and growth.
Mm-hmm. Right. You went big on the answer there. You went from somebody who has a brand new brand to Jeff Bezos and billions of dollars. But so if I can distill down what
Please.
You just said.
Which you're good at.
Thank you. So that's what my skill set as an editor is to tighten. What you said is, number one, think of this as a long game. And so don't be focused right now on making those huge sales immediately. Instead, start investing in the long term. And then number two, if you can't tell people the value that you have right now, which you can't simply because you're new, then you let them discover that value themselves by giving them something so that they can experience it and then believe you, which is something that you may not have to do down the line once you're an established brand and you know exactly what your value is and you have lots of people that are vouching for you. At that point, you can say, listen, we'd love for you to come in. Here's the price. Come on in. We'll help you out. But if you can't do that, then right now what you need to do is offer something. Something for free, something for discount, something so that somebody is willing to come in and check it out and learn for themselves that you do have the value that you say you have.
But also ask for value back. So if you're going to discount or give something for free, mm-hmm. then get what you want, which is the quantitative value or experiential data that they're going to give you. And people do it all the time. The biggest companies do it to small companies. I get more free stuff from being an influencer now
yeah.
because people want me to experience it and either help them tell them what value it has to someone like mm-hmm. me or allow me to go share it with an athlete, celebrity, or an influencer so they'll even get a farther reach. But they all have to start there. If you think about it, if you can't articulate the quantifiable value, how can you sell it?
Mm-hmm.
There has to be, because people are giving you quantifiable money. Here's what people don't understand.
Yeah.
We live on this earth at this vibration. There is one currency, it's called money. It really is. Money can take different forms, but that currency is an object of energy that you put into the flow. The analogy that I use is, you know, there's a green card, there's a platinum card, and a black card,
mm-hmm.
right? And the more energy you have, you know, you put a green card into Amazon, it manifests a certain amount.
Yeah.
Platinum card more, black card unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we do in business is we understand that side, but we don't understand that faith, which can be quantified as what we think, say, do, believe,
mm-hmm.
and our personal characteristics, our obsessions, addictions, characteristics, all of those different things that create our own energy. Faith is actually an object of energy that we put into the universe, right? That actually, I think, combined with money, when you have, okay, here's the quantifiable, now I can think, say, and do, okay, I know that if you buy my Peloton bike, that the quantitative value of living longer, or you know, the pain that's caused, or not getting able to get to work, or being more productive and accessible, I can quantify to you what being more productive and accessible is, meaning providing more value to others, being accessible to others, and accessing what I want because I'm healthier.
Right.
And quantitatively, in a Peloton bike, show you why the $30 or $40 a month that it costs, that I can make you, and I'll show you a plan if you want, I can make you thousands of dollars a month if you're willing to invest, and either one, have the potential, and two, be willing to use the product correctly.
Yeah. You know, I'm gonna throw a wrinkle in
Please.
Here, though, which is that for a new brand, like the whoever our viewer was, you may not know how to describe your value in a way that your audience best receives it. You may know what you've built, but you may not know exactly what it is that your audience is connecting with and exactly how to reach them. And you learn that through data. right? So you know, I mean, you and I say this because you were saying, you know, you if you don't know what your value is, but sometimes you may know what your value is, but you don't know exactly how your audience is going to perceive that value. And I'm sure you have heard from so many entrepreneurs who went out into the world and realized that they were talking about their product all wrong. They had solved a problem, but they hadn't solved a problem in the way that their audience was looking for the problem to be solved, even if it was the same product, right? They needed to learn how to talk about it differently. They needed to learn how to present the solution to maybe sometimes a completely different problem. And so you learn that by going out into the world, by talking to your audience, by providing them something, which means sometimes you gotta steeply discount it, offer it for free, just so that you can start that relationship and start that conversation. And then you learn from them, and then you can shift how you talk about your value.
I have a great example of that.
Yeah.
I've been asked to be on a board of a company, and in this space, there's a lot of different companies trying to monetize celebrity interaction and experience, meaning you can talk to this person, they can give you a cameo, you know, all these different companies that have an experience with Jason, right? Even Entrepreneur does it with our mentoring, right? One-on-one.
Sure.
Well, I was approached by a company that wanted to do that with celebrities, and their unique aspect is called Modi. They have two people here. It keeps track of the time, and it goes right to the credit card.
Okay.
Right? So your credit card, and you get paid automatically.
Yeah.
So Entrepreneur could use it for, my mind immediately said, you're in the wrong place.
Hmm.
Right? That's not a market, because celebrities will talk to you for free. Mm-hmm. And people aren't willing to pay for things that are free. In fact, one of the strategies I have as a brand is I go and re-engineer what other people give and charge for, and I just give it for free. Right, because I understand a different value in it.
Yeah.
Right, so someone's gonna give a mastermind and it's $25,000, I'm gonna offer that for free.
Yeah, because then you've built that relationship and you can do something with that relationship.
Right, and people that can afford that and wanna go that and have that brand, I can do a much bigger business deal once I have credibility, emotional attachment, et cetera.
Yeah.
Well, I looked at it and said, where's the real use of something like that? It's in lawyers, right? I come from a law background.
Mm-hmm.
Why would it be lawyers? Because there's a two-way disruption right now.
Yeah.
I'm a lawyer, you're my client.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that you hate the most is calling me, because I charge $500 an hour as a lawyer, and you get on the phone for 1 minute to ask maybe a simple question, or maybe it's just to ask me out to lunch, and it goes to 20 minutes on billable, and it's literally 20 minutes, a third of $500 to call me for 1 minute, so I have to round out. And I have to overbill you, because my biggest business issue is it's not the work that I do, it's collecting.
Yeah.
Right? It's 20% the work I do, it's 80% collecting, because everybody knows their lawyers are exaggerating, aren't really figuring out what the costs are, so they built in a discount, so you feel like a nice guy. Okay, Jason, you know, I'm only gonna charge you for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this actually, imagine how nice it would be as a client that I could lower my rate to $100, you call for 8 minutes, and you know, that exact amount of minutes gets charged, I don't have to collect.
Yeah.
I'm actually making more money, because 80% of my work is in collecting.
Mm-hmm.
I have no collectibles.
Yeah.
Right? No receivables at all. And I can charge you literally 80% less, $100 an hour. And you have no concern about being exactly charged for what you talk to, because it's right there in front of you on your bill.
Right. That's understanding the marketplace enough to identify multiple pain points from both sides.
And by giving it for free and allowing people to use it, there's been all these other people now that say, you know, coaching. Right, I'm using it for esports training. I built the Meltzer Academy for, you know, forget sports anymore for me. I want to get the top 40 players in every single game. I don't care what games come out, because more kids want to be coached in Fortnite than they do baseball anymore.
Yeah.
It's true.
I got another one. Here we go. I have a brand. This comes from Lena. But I'm extremely camera shy. Is it okay if I hire someone else to represent the brand on social, even if it's not associated with their why? What should I look out for? It's an interesting question.
I like that question. Coming from an agent, of course it's okay to have somebody else that is a professional that can convey and articulate and have a forceful and resonates with people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why actors are in movies, not the actual person that they made the movie about.
Yeah.
Right? Lee Steinberg was not in Jerry Maguire. He would have been horrible. It would have been the best sports movie of all time, or romantic sports movie of all time. So absolutely, what you should look for, though, is someone that is conveying that message with the signal, the frequency, that you would do it in an optimal world. If you dreamed that you were doing it how you want it done, that's the person that you would like to do it for you. And sometimes someone even has more frequency, and you actually are just buying someone that already has that frequency, and you just know, wow, Jason is the exact personality that I would like to represent this product as, you know, the chief editor of Entrepreneur. He has the credibility, his emotional attachment and audience is exactly what is aligned. If I, in a perfect world, I could do what you do, because our personalities, we both interview, mm-hmm. but our interviews go completely different. Because like you said, you're an editor, you get in narrow down where I have this experiential side of me where I want to get into the playbook side. Mm-hmm. And very rarely I'm like, oh, hold on, you know, Dave, let me, right? Yeah. But we do different things. Sure. So for certain products, you're the guy.
Right. But what do you do then if you've hired someone? And I totally agree. If you're camera shy, you're not going to represent your brand well. So don't be the person who's the forward-facing part of the brand. But here's the problem. If you go out and you hire somebody else and that person becomes the face of your brand, but they're not you, they suddenly have more power perhaps than they should. Or if you end that relationship, that can harm your brand. And we have seen that happen, right? There are two recent examples, HQ Trivia, which had that guy who was the host and everyone loved that guy and they felt an allegiance to that guy just left. And I think that HQ Trivia took a hit on it. And then of course, very famously, Verizon.
I was gonna say, yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Verizon, which used this guy as their spokesperson for quite a while. And then now he's pitching for the opponent.
The exact opponent.
So what do you do?
Yeah, and the same thing's happening in sports as well, mm-hmm. right? We have athletes that are controlling and dictating trades, free agency, and destroying brands,
yeah.
right? And the owners are sitting there at the mercy of an individual brand.
Right.
And it's only gonna get worse. Mm-hmm. Look, you can't do anything about the person leaving, but what you can do is do good lawyering. You really can. Because mm-hmm. remember that the value diminishes exponentially after services are rendered.
Yeah.
So I use that in my negotiation as an agent, mm-hmm. right? If the fear is you're going to leave and diminish my brand, then you have to protect yourself when you're negotiating and the person, this actor or this influencer, really wants the money, sees the opportunity, doesn't have, nobody knew who that Verizon guy was.
Yeah.
So you could have easily locked him in mm-hmm. and made sure that he never could work for another. And there's different ways to do that, for example, than just having a non-compete, non-circumvent clause.
Yeah.
There's a lot of ways to have continual hiring clauses where after a certain time, if you ever do not want to be the spokesperson, that you can remain as a consultant to the next spokesperson. Mm-hmm. So basically what you're saying is we have the right to have, if you're super successful but want to move on and make more money, we're actually going to hire you, trap you into being hired. Now that non-compete, non-circumvent continues because you're an employee of mine.
Yeah, right. So you can't control the relationship, but you can control how you enter the relationship.
Yeah, and the outcomes.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think, I wonder if there's another kind of element to it, which is the way that you present that person. Because of course.
Oh, I would not diminish the presentation. So, because when you start going into that right off the bat, that energy mm-hmm. of presenting him not fully the person, you won't get the results that you're looking
well,
for.
Well, but there's also a difference between someone who's clearly a spokesperson and someone who seems to be the brand. Like, there's a big difference between
the insurance companies have this problem too, right? You know who the key in my business, it was called the 250K person. So there was one person. Flow. There's one. We know the people for Allstate.
Yeah.
You see the picture in my head. Mm-hmm. Is Allstate still the brand? And now we have Nationwide. Think about the person and the great jingle that they have.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So what do they do? It's an evolution. When they start out, it's not really the brand.
Yeah.
But the winners become the brand. Mm-hmm. When you actually do your job better and pick the right person, you actually run a fear and you have to mitigate the risk that, wow, I did a great job picking the right spokesperson.
Right, right.
But who's bigger, the spokesperson or my brand?
Yes, that's right.
And they're so tied. And if he says, I don't like the brand anymore, mm-hmm. like that hurts you.
Right, right. The jingle, you know, you said, well, as soon as you said the jingle with Nationwide, it's like you got Nationwide. But the thing is,
everything hates me right now because all night they're going to be singing that.
Well, thinking about that, yeah, well, that's better than like the PJ Masks music that my kids keep stuck in my head. So the thing about the Nationwide jingle, right, is that Nationwide owns that jingle. So you could have a cycling cast, a cast of thousands coming through your advertisements, but you have that signal to the consumer that this is the thing that you trust, this is the thing that we've invested in. It's something that goes beyond the person. It's great to have a person,
like,
a likable person.
Like that.
And
they change personalities all the time.
Right.
They protected themselves. That's one way of protecting.
They built trust into this signal that they own.
A frequency.
That's right. You hear it over and over again. There's no better articulation of frequency than the jingle that you hear every single time you engage with that brand. That is frequency.
Yeah, and I've used it literally with Uncle David, right? Mm-hmm. Because I started realizing there's nobody at my frequency dealing on Instagram particularly,
yeah,
right? That I'm kind of the old man of the river. Mm-hmm. And so I decided, who do you want to go to for advice, right? Who do you, it's not your dad, because there's all kinds of emotional problems with dads,
yeah,
right? You want to be Papa Dave, right? It was Uncle David. Mm-hmm. Everybody likes Uncle David.
Sure.
And when dad's mean to me, I go to Uncle David. He's going to give me good advice because he actually knows, it doesn't have any vested interest, mm-hmm, right? And he knows my dad too.
Right.
So that actually is another way, right? By branding a character within yourself, and there's tons out there, again, just like a jingle that can protect you as well. So even the person like a Papa John,
uh-huh,
right, who used the same person that Nationwide used,
uh-huh,
right? Unfortunately, he tied his own brand to his own name, and then he destroyed his own brand.
Right, right. Well, Papa John did what, minus the horrible crashing end of Papa John, had previously done what was very smart. He put himself out there.
With the guys, though, right? He was under his arm. Everybody knows that quarterback.
That's right. He was maintaining a consistency, which was him, and he had put himself as the face of that brand that he had built, and that really made a lot of sense. He wasn't even very good on camera.
Right.
He was terrible.
That's exactly the point. He was like that girl, the woman who was asking us, I'm not good on camera.
Right.
But what he was good, it made him look funny because the guys he had with him on camera is super good. It's super expensive.
Right.
But he saved himself. If he would have kept his own brand at a credible level, mm-hmm, he could have replaced that quarterback any day of the week.
Yes, that's right. All right, Dave, we only have a few minutes left, so I want you to give our viewers some homework. If they are thinking about brand building, maybe they're just kind of starting out, maybe they are not even quite there yet, and they're thinking about getting in. We've talked a lot about frequency. We've talked about building that frequency. What is the number one thing that somebody, the second that this video ends, should step back and think and start planning?
I think that five steps that we talked about under the context of what branding is today, make sure you're capturing it, considering these five things. And those five things, just to remind you, mm-hmm, are quantify your credibility of your brand. Think about, why is this credible?
Yep.
The emotional attachment, what people are gonna like and don't like and emotionally attach. Quantify reasons, impacts, and capabilities. But do it under the context that I'm gonna capture that value.
Mm-hmm.
Amplify the value and perpetuate it. What we talked about earlier, where I wanted to close, was that I don't think enough people realize that there is a whole world of repository.
Mm-hmm.
And that repository is perpetual. And that as your brand grows, make sure you have a strategic use for all that you've captured, amplified, and perpetuated in the past. You can actually not only be consistent every day, but go back and repeat and exponentially grow the repetitiveness by repositing. And, you know, I hate to use Gary again, but there's others. I do it. Mashups,
uh-huh,
right? Continually playing stuff from 3 years ago, mashing up and creating and showing yourself, I said this was going to happen, now it happened, right? That's a perpetuation of your brand.
Yeah.
And so I think if you stick to frequency and think about, is how strong is my signal, how wide is my spectrum, and how clear is my message, which is value,
mm-hmm,
how clear? And I always have one question, right?
Yeah.
Can you see any reason, me myself, on my own product, service, or solution, or my own brand, can I see any reason that somebody wouldn't want to do this?
Mm.
Like, literally be able to answer that question under the guise of 120 value. I actually still today, as part of my meditative practice, I look out in my room every morning and dream that it's filled with $100 bills and take an energy of what's it going to feel like today to hand out hundreds and ask for 20 back. Because I want to physically, emotionally, spiritually feel that,
yeah,
so that when you and I are talking, people are like, man, He brings a lot to the table. Mm-hmm. That was a great interview. Or even my family, I'm so glad he showed up to the party.
Right?
Because I lit up the room.
Yeah.
One particle of light will overcome a million particles of darkness. So carry the light. Look at it in an actual energetic mode of what kind of energy. Because I've seen guys who have great businesses, and I'm almost suffering through them trying to sell it to me. And you've seen it on elevator pitch.
Sure.
Horrible pitch. And at the end, he's like, oh, by the way, you know, we made $2 million in 3 weeks.
Right.
What?
What? Yeah.
Like, there's no energy in the guy.
That. Yeah.
Right, right, but there's no energy even.
Yes, yes.
Right, then you see other guys that carry 120 energy, and you're going, this business stinks.
Right. Well, I would say that that is great homework, although I have a feeling, Dave, that the thing that people are going to take away most from that is to just imagine their room full of $100 bills.
Good, every day.
That's fine.
But do things every day.
Yeah.
7 days a week, 2 minutes a day is worth more than 2 hours on a Saturday. Definitely do it 2 minutes, you know, lower the bar. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making the playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.